We're provided by you.
Okay, are you on?
I'm on.
Okay, gotta be with Maria Swan, to February 19th, 2010.
My name is Anya Krumenacher. I'll be sitting in on the interview.
And I'm Gary Knapp, and I'll also be sitting in on the interview. And Maria, we've got a couple of questions. To begin with, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your history? Where were you born and raised?
So my name is Maria Council, and I was born in Walnut Creek, California.
Walnut Creek, oh, I love that city.
You do? Oh, somebody's heard of it. So Walnut Creek, I pretty much was raised until I was a teenager when I moved here. So I lived in Berkeley that much I can remember. I think I moved there when I was 2 with my family. Lived in Berkeley. Raised Catholic, very Catholic. Went to Catholic school. All of my siblings did. I'm the youngest of 4. And I'm the baby. I'm the oops in my family. The closest one to me in age, my brother, who's since passed away in 2003, but he's 9 years older than me, and my sister's 10 and then years older, and my other brother's 12 years older than me.
Goodness.
Yeah. So I'm the spoiled one.
Yeah.
Somebody had to be, so it's me. I moved to Portland when I was a sophomore in high school, so I don't know, 15, 16, something like that. Whatever it was devastating. I can't remember how old I was, but it was, you know, I'd rather die than move somewhere in a new state, you know. All I knew was my friends, you know, in my block. So anyway, so I moved here, went to school, went to St. Mary's Academy, hung out at Portland State more than I did at St. Mary's Academy because we had off campus and it was cool to pretend like you were going to PSU rather than going to St. Mary's. I graduated from there in 1982. Yeah. That was it. Lived in Troutdale most of my life. When I moved here, we moved to Gresham for a minute, but then got a home. My family, my parents got a home. And now I've been here. My dad lives here. My parents are divorced. After 28 years of marriage, they decided to divorce. And my dad lives here. My mom lives back in California with the rest of my family. And currently, my roommates are my dad and my sister.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. I mean, I guess I could go into more depth about where I'm from. But
whatever you're comfortable with.
Yeah. I mean, as I get more comfortable, I think I'll be more talkative.
Yeah.
Okay, so are we testing this or we're going to just keep going?
I guess just keep going.
Yeah, it looks like it's recording. This is recording nicely. So.
Yeah, this is recording, so.
Okay.
Well, we understand that you've been involved with Peacock Productions for a considerable amount of time now. What got you involved with Peacock?
When I, I hung out downtown because I went to school downtown, so I got to see a lot of life that I wouldn't have if I stayed in Troutdale. And so I was already going to the City Nightclub, which was the gay and lesbian underage club. And it was called the City Nightclub. Now it's called The Escape. It's changed hands several times or changed names several times. But in the 80s when I was going, it was called the City Nightclub. It was on 13th. And like Taylor or something. Anyway, so I started going there and they had drag queens performing, you know, my age, some older, a lot of times they were older. And the first time I saw a drag queen, I was like, oh, shut up. They're so glamorous, you know. Mm-hmm. I loved it. And I didn't really understand the whole lip sync thing. I didn't know, you know, I just knew that they were beautiful. They're, you know, and I couldn't believe they're like, that's a guy. I'm like, no, it's not. No, it is not. That is, she's beautiful, you know. So I started going to the same nightclub, and then I turned 21, and the first place I went was Darcelle's. Everybody kind of, mm-hmm. you know, that's a rite of passage, I think, when you're gay. When you're gay or lesbian and you're turning 21, you're going to go see other gay people. And so I went there, and then the Embers. And the Embers used to have a show on Friday and Saturday nights. And I was just like in awe. I just loved all of them. And there was a queen named Patty Odora. And she was a big girl. And it was the first time that I saw, like, a big girl, drag queen, you know, on stage. Everybody else was thin and model-like, you know. And I was like, she's just like me, you know. I thought, first of all, I thought, here's a big black girl that's lip-syncing. Everybody loves her. And she's like Miss Gay Oregon or something. So that's really glamorous and, you know. And so we started talking. I was like, I just adore you. And we started talking. And she was Miss Oregon. And she had asked me to be a part of a benefit show she had. And she was like, you know, I think you could do it. We could be like sisters. And I can, you know, do your makeup for you and all that. And I was like, okay. You know, I'm game. I'm 21 years old. Sure. And it was performing at Darcelle's. And I'm like, so let me get this right. I get to look like you. I get to perform on Darcelle's stage, you know, whatever. And she said, yeah, you know. And so I did. So my very first performance, although when I look at it now thinking, why did I put on spandex? But, you know, I'll have, you know, to start somewhere. And I did this number, Hungry for Love, with Patty Odora. And we didn't tell anybody. We just dressed me. You know, I did the wig, the lashes. She did me up. And we just acted like I was a drag queen. I was like, that's kind of fun. I looked at myself. I thought I looked pretty. And I just thought, well, let's just see how this goes. And so in the drag community, a lot of times you have a drag mom or drag mother is what we call them, you know. Okay. And Patty Odora would be my drag mom. And a lot of times in the community, you'll take the name of the person that sponsors you or the person that put you in drag for the first time or whatever. But I never took the Odora name. I just always knew, you know, she's always been my mom. So I never thought about it or anything. I've always had just one name. It's, you know, it's never been like Maria Council. It's just Maria. Or once I became Empress, it was Rose Empress. It's always been Rose Empress 36 Maria, you know. And people were like, what's your last name? I'm like, one name. Like Cher, Madonna, Sting. You don't need another name. I only need one. So that's how it's gone. So anyway, so I started my performance. And I got hooked on the whole drag thing. Started performing at the Embers. And there was a queen that was always at the City Nightclub. She was like the star of it, you know, Lady Elaine Peacock. Beautiful queen. She was sexy. She was flirtatious with males and females. I mean, you know, the lesbians loved her. You know, we all just adored her. And I started seeing her more and hanging and talking to her and stuff. And then I really got involved in the Rose Court, the Imperial Sovereign Rose Court, which is the oldest GLBT organization mm-hmm. in Oregon. I got involved in that. And she was Rose Empress. Or she was getting ready to run to be Rose Empress, but she had been Princess and Rosebud, you know, which is the junior court, and so everybody knew her, you know, and we became friends, and she ran for Empress, and I was on her campaign, and that's when I really got started. It was about that time I'm 22 years old. So I did her campaign and watched that whole thing and how being an empress was and all that. And I started running for titles. And I ran for Foxy Lady, which is no longer around, but it was a fun little title that they did. They had Mr. Hunky and Foxy Lady. And it was taking the guys and changing them over to be real butch and, you know, and all that. And then the Foxy Lady was the lesbian title. And it was like transforming the lesbians who were no makeup and, you know, anything into these glamour pusses, you know. And I ran for it, and I didn't win. I was the first runner-up. But I got my first taste, and I kind of liked this whole running pageant thing, whatever was going on. I fit in and I like this, you know. So I then went over and ran for Ms. Gay Oregon, the female title, which was fairly new for lesbians. It was number four. So yeah, it'd been 4 years that they had created this lesbian title, Ms. So I ran and I lost. And I thought, I really still like this and I want to keep trying it. So I ran for Ms. Gay Portland. And that was like, I think 1987. And I was the second Ms. Gay Portland. So all this time, I'm really into it. I'm hanging out. I'm not letting people know that I'm a drag queen or that I'm a real woman. I'm letting them think that I'm a drag queen. They never see me without full regalia, you know, makeup, lashes, all that stuff. And I just got more involved with the court system, ran for Miss Portland. Then after stepping down the following year, I ran for Ms. Gay Oregon. I was number six. And then Patty Odora, my drag mom, in 91, ran for Empress, for the position of Rose Empress 33. And I, of course, was on her campaign. She's my mom, you know, I'm gonna help her and whatever. She wins and makes me her princess, which is a kind of, you know, second in line or, you know, first in line mm-hmm. in succession or whatever, but you have your empress and your princess. And those prince and princess in the Rose Court are appointed. So there's a big hullabaloo because by about that time, some folks knew she's a real woman even though she does drag. And they're like, well, what is she? Is she a lesbian? Is she a drag queen? Is she straight? I'm like, no, I'm lesbian, but I like doing drag. So we kind of coined the Northwest First Lesbian Drag Queen, you know, kind of thing. That was mm-hmm. kind of my title, just to explain it. But there was not a lot of hullabaloo, but a lot of people were like, this organization was started by men for men. It's a drag organization. Do we really want this woman to be princess? Finally, people are like, she can be princess. Never empress, but she can be princess. It's appointed. It's no big deal. So I was. So it's Princess 21, the very first female princess of the Rose Court. Well, after that, of course, I'm going to want to be empress. I don't care what you say. I could care less.
What you got to taste?
You know, yeah. I'm like, okay. I mean, people, you know, within the international court system, you truly are treated differently depending on your titles, you know. And by the time I got to princess and I could taste that, you know, I'm holding the scepter for the empress. And people would come up and go, oh, and you're the empress of? I go, no, I'm the princess. And they'd walk away, you know, to go see the empress. I'm like, oh, no, that's going to be me. I'm going to be it. So I decided to run for 36, Rose Empress 36. And I had people tell me before I ran that they wouldn't love me dearly, but would never vote for me because it's a by men, for men organization. When I was Miss Oregon, my Miss Oregon, she said she would never ever vote for me for Empress. She goes, I love you, but I would never. This is a drag organization. You're not a drag queen. There's not a title for you. And I got support from a couple of monarchs, people that had been Empress, we call them monarchs, from them. And I said, okay, I'm going to do it. And I did. And I had even my princess, or a dear friend of mine, who has since passed away, but she's really a good friend. We spent days and days planning out my campaign because it's a citywide campaign. You're out for 3 weeks trying to get people to vote for you during functions and all that. So she had everything down. And then about a month before, she came to me and said, I think I'm going to run because, you know, it is a by men, for men organization. And I'm like, you know everything I'm going to do. And now you're going to run against me, you know. So I just tried my best and thought, you know, I've lost before. As a matter of fact, everything I run for, I had lost up until that point because the first time trying out. So I ran for Miss Oregon, lost, Foxy Lady lost. I ran for Portland, but I was the only one, so there was no competition. Ran for Oregon, same thing. You have to get 50% of the vote, but most likely you're going to, and I did. So I never had a competition. And when I did have a competition, I lost. So I thought, I probably could lose this, but I'm going to try it. So I did. I ran, and I won. I know. I was freaking out. Because then I was like, now what? Well, not only that, the person that ran for emperor was female. There were two. There was a man and a woman. Babalu is her name. And then, so it was Dwayne Chad, Babalu, and then Penny Michaels and myself. And Babalu and I won. So the Rose Court saw not only their first female empress, but their first female reign. Babalu was the second female emperor, but there's never been another female reign in the Rose Court history. And we're on Empress 51 now.
Wow.
Right.
When was that?
That was 1993.
And who was that again?
It was Babalu, Rose Emperor 20, Babalu 1, and then me, Rose Emperor 36.
Wow.
I know. It was crazy. I was like, we both looked at each other, and Babalu had way more experience in the Rose Court. And again, you know, an organization where she had dedicated so much time, but they were like, the lesbians need to be over here, you know? I'm like, that doesn't seem quite right. She was prince. She was, you know, she had been on the board. She was president of the board for many years, and they didn't care about that. But the minute we wanted to be monarchs, they were like, ah, you know. So, anyway, I had befriended Peacock all those years, and Peacock's sister, Misty Waters. And when I ran and was crowned, Lady Lane Peacock was very ill and did not come to that coronation. And so the last time that I had a chance to really talk to him was the Sunday after I stepped up. So it was like October of 93. And when you win, the next day you do kind of a bar tour and, you know, you're out. Well, I told everybody I'm not doing a bar tour until I can go see Peacock and make sure that he sees me with this crown on my head and this scepter, because I know he voted for me and I really want him to see it. So we went to his house and I went upstairs, and I will never forget him helping me, showing me how to hold the scepter, how to wear my crown, what to say to people that are negative. I mean, he just gave me like the lesson of Empress condensed, you know, in like a 30-minute conversation. And so that was on a Sunday, and then within that week he passed away.
Wow.
Like 3 days later or something like that. And I was working, I want to say it was on a Wednesday, but I was working and I got a call from his partner, Ray Southwick, that said he's in the hospital, but he was talking to Darcel and joking and all that, he's in good spirits. And I go, I want to come now. He's like, no, come later when you get off work. Don't take off work early. I was like, okay, I get off work at 5. I got up there, it was up on the hill. I got there at 5:30, and he had passed away like at 4:30. I know. I was like, really, Ray? I could have come up, you know. So it was Kimberly Van Patten, and at the time, Kimberly and I were together, and her and I were up there and in the room with Woody's body and Ray Southwick, talking and just spending some time, you know, just kind of deprogramming ourselves. And Ray said, it's Woody's wish to continue. He had started Peacock in the park, and it was a benefit for his scholarship fund, which he started, which is the Audrey M. Edwards Scholarship Fund, named after his mother. And he established that in 87 is when he made the announcement. She died at his coronation when he stepped down as Rose Empress. We were downtown. She had a heart attack backstage. Yeah. And passed away at his coronation. He stayed to step down, but then left. I know. It was just like, really? So 1987... in October, she passes away. And he establishes the Audrey M. Edwards Scholarship Fund. During his reign, He always wanted to perform at Washington Park in the amphitheater. So he put together Peacock and the Roses show, just a drag show in the park. Did it. Then Audria passes away. He establishes the scholarship fund and decides, we're going to do this Peacock and the Roses show every year as a benefit for the Audrey M. Edwards Scholarship Fund. So the very next year in 88, I believe that's the year that it changed to Peacock in the Park. I don't think it was Peacock and the Roses. It was Peacock in the Park. And then in 89, they gave away their first scholarship. So 89, and here I am. I'm now Empress. I'm told it was Woody's wish that you and Kimberly keep this going. And I think, I've always felt this way, and I could be wrong, but I've always felt this way that, because I think, why did you pick us? Why would you take the two lesbians? I mean, we love you dearly, and we'd do anything. And at that time, we had been working very hard backstage. We were doing hot dog sales in the front. We were, you know, doing all kinds of stuff. And I was performing on stage. Kim was always doing all the stuff on the side and making sure that I look good, or, you know, everybody else look good. And I think because at that point we were losing a lot of people to AIDS, a lot of queens that took a big old chunk out of the Rose Court from AIDS. And I think Peacock was thinking, if I give it to so-and-so, they may be sick as well. You know, and back then we didn't look at lesbians going, well, they're HIV positive. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why, I think that was his thinking. I don't know. But I've always felt that way. And so in June of 1994, I was the hostess / MC, we always call me the hostess, of Peacock in the Park. So that started... We ran that through 18 years. 2004, we stopped because it got to be too expensive. It was like the biggest party in the community, but people weren't, it's supposed to be a fundraiser, and people weren't fundraising. they were partying, they were bringing their barbecues, but they weren't doing anything else. So we stopped doing it, and then we thought, we need to do something. We've got to keep the scholarship going. It's not mine to decide to end. It's the wish of somebody that can't fight back now. So it's our job to keep it going. What are we going to do? And Poison Waters, who's one of my dearest friends, known him since he was a teenager, was talking to Kimberly and I one day, and he was like, you know what? We should do a show at the Performing Arts Center. I go, yes, we should, because I'm always about yes. We should. Let's do it. And so we contacted them, and they gave us a date. We were like, for real? We can bring drag queens in here? And we got a date. It was September 9th, I think, was the first year. It was three years ago. So September, I know that. We did the first Peacock After Dark, and we did it inside where we could have a ticket price, and that way we could make money for the scholarship fund. And we did it in the Newmark Theater. So it's the biggest theater in there. I know, it's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And I just was like, okay, this is fabulous. This is fabulous. Like, we're all on this professional stage with, like, you know, curtains that come down and up and lighting effects and all that, you know, not some concrete slab outside or, you know, some bar where you just have a spotlight and that's it. So we did the first one. It wasn't sold out by any means. A lot of people were negative because that's how they are. People don't like change. And they're like, you know, it used to be a party where it's free. Now you want to charge, you know, but it's a little bit different. You know, we're giving you big production numbers and sets and scenery and, you know, excellent off the chart performances, you know, Aerialist last year and, you know, just all kinds of stuff. It's really fun. And the ticket price is $25. That's really not a much. It's very inexpensive, you know. So, yeah. that's what we did. And so that's how I got involved. Sorry. So that's how I got involved with Peacock After Dark, because of Peacock in the Park and Lady Elaine Peacock. And that took me a long time to get to that question. Sorry about that.
That was wonderful.
Good.
What year was that? You guys went from Peacock in the Park to...
So 2004 to 2008.
Okay.
Yeah, because this is... Yeah, September 2008 was number one. And then we did it in October last year for 2009. And this year we're back in September. So it's a fall thing, but we don't, you know, Peacock in the Park was always the last Sunday in June. But here we're just kind of at the mercy, because it's kind of like, you know, you get that little spoonful and you can't get it out of your mouth, you know. And so now that we've done it once, we want to continue to do it. So we're kind of at the mercy of them. But I think once we establish a long-term relationship, we'll be able to say, we want this date, you know. So it's getting bigger. The second year we had more people, and now we actually have someone in St. Louis that is starting a scholarship fund, and it's called the Pride of Peacock. We didn't really want them using Peacock or do Peacock After Dark, but it's Pride of Peacock, and they're going to do the same idea, a show and raise money, and it'll be, you know, using Lady Elaine Peacock's name, and in their history, it'll be why we did this after this queen in Portland, Lady Elaine Peacock. So we're spreading our wings.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I really like it. I really like it. So, all right, you want me to go to another question?
Let's see. Well, what are your fondest memories of the Peacock productions?
I think it's that theater. You get out on that stage and it's like, oh, wow. You know, it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. And to be able to do things that you vision, you know, you have this vision in your head, and actually it can come true because you're on a huge stage and you have professional, you know, tech people and, you know, all that. So, not the first one, because the first one was kind of like surreal, you know. I mean, I didn't sleep through it, but I just, you know, the anxiety was so much that you kind of forget it. But this last year, in October 2009, we had a children's number. We did a live version of It's a Hard Knock Life, and we had this wonderful lady, Susan Overcast, who is a big, huge supporter of the community, and just funny and talented and great. She played Mrs. Hannigan, and we sent out info via Just Out at Pride, asking parents if they had kids that liked to perform. And we got about 12 kids that did It's a Hard Knock Life live. And the gal that played Annie played it in the Northwest Children's production of it. And she was nominated for whatever Portland's version of a Tony would be for playing this Annie character. And they were so cute. I mean, in the rehearsals, we were all crying. You know, I mean, just the tiniest little girl running around there pulling on this Hannigan and stuff. And the choreography was very simple, but the kids were mic'd and you could hear them, and they were singing and they were having a great time. And so that so far is my best memory. And we really want to always, our focus has always been to make things all ages. Everything we do, we try to include everybody. And so we want to hopefully continue that and always have a spotlight where there's a kid's number, not anything else, but, you know, kids just having a good time. Yeah, so that's my fondest memory so far. But there's lots more to go.
Well, let's look at the opposite of that then. What are some of the worst things you remember about...
The worst things about... You know, not the show itself. The worst thing for me is that you have to tell people no. I'm not very good at that. I really am not. I don't like to tell people no. But you have to, because we, you know, we have a limit. You can't, I mean, I got a text message at 12:30 a.m. Wednesday, or, you know, Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. Someone saying, please, please, please let me perform at Peacock After Dark this year. Like, it's after midnight on a Tuesday. Really? And you have to, you know, there comes a point you have to say no. And I really wish I could say, yeah, everybody who wants to be in it can. And I can't do that. And that's why we try and say, okay, you know, Poison, you're given a slot, but it has to be a group number, because then we're hoping that you'll incorporate more of the community and people can at least be on stage and perform and not, you know, be sitting out there. So that's the worst part, I think, because I just want everybody to have a good time and be in it and be involved if they want to. But, you know, there's some people that, and I don't want to say like they're, everybody has their own talent, and I love and can appreciate everybody, but it has to go along the lines of what we're trying to give. And so, you know, that's, mm-hmm. It's hard for me to say no. It's hard for me to be mean, or I just, you know, I mean.
You seem like you want to make people's wishes come true.
I do. I hate saying no. I think, you know, that's a, I don't know, probably something, my parents probably told me no once or something. I don't know. I really hate it. So that's, yeah, that's probably the worst thing. Other than that.
How long have you been working for Just Out?
I'm a newbie. I got here in August. Oh. I worked for attorneys for 14 years downtown, for a big law firm downtown. And I went to work for them as a receptionist for the summer in 1994 when I was in prison. I was just supposed to work for 3 months. I'm backing up a little bit. But prior to that, I worked for the Hallmark Corporation, and I was very closeted. And then I became Empress. It's kind of hard, you know, I mean, doing things. And I went to, I transferred over and went to manage a store downtown for this guy that I thought was wonderful, and I just thought it would be a good, you know, a good move for me. And then I became Empress, and at Christmas time, I hired some people to work for me, just for Christmas, that were going, some college students that I knew, that also knew that I was gay. And it wasn't that I wasn't closeted, I just didn't talk about it. You know, I didn't have a need to talk about it. I'm Maria, you know, and that was it. Well, while we were doing something one day, one of the gals was like, I'm so glad, thanks for hiring me. And she's like, are you and Kim still together? And I was like, well, yeah, we're still together. She's like, that's so great. And the next day she said, you know, they were asking me why I asked about that, and asking if you were gay, and I thought you had told them. I'm like, you have nothing to worry about. They didn't ask me. I didn't tell them anything. I don't, you know, I didn't care. The next day, I got a phone call that said, you know, we just think you're not working out here. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't think it had anything to do with me being black. I don't think it had anything with me being overweight. I really happen to believe, although I did nothing about it, I think it had to do with me being gay. Call me crazy. So I didn't work. And a friend of mine was working at this law firm and said, you want to come? They need a part-time receptionist just for the summer because everybody's taking vacations. I was like, that'd be perfect. And make some little money in the summer and then continue on, because as Empress, you're traveling around representing your organization. But we are volunteers, you know. We're not getting paid for this. We're not sponsored. You know, I don't want to say we're not sponsored. There are people that are gracious enough to say, you know, you're the Empress and I want to give you this gift or whatever. But for the most part, it's your own money and you're going, you know, I went to New York and Canada, they have several courts, and all in California and Oregon, Washington, you know. And so you're traveling on your money. So I thought, I'll just take all this money that I'm going to make working 3 months, and I'll use it for my coronation and buy my big gowns and all that. Well, that was in May of 94, and I left in September of 2008. And my dad was pretty sick. I'd been sick, and for the last couple of years, I'd been trying to work and take care of him. And at that point, it was just me and my dad living here. The rest of my family's in California. And it got to be too much, and I had taken the family leave of absence because I needed, my dad was really, really sick, in and out of the hospital, had to have 24-hour care. And while I was on that family leave, I was like, I don't really think that I'm that happy there anymore. And life is kind of short, you know. My brother died in 2003. He was 46 years old. He was not overweight. He was not a drinker. He was not a smoker. He had a broken heart. And he was stressed out, and he had a heart attack and died instantly. 46 years old. So I thought, okay, that's not happening to me because I am overweight. And I am, you know, tend to smoke and drink a little bit. And I don't want to be stressed. And so mutually we agreed that it was time for me to go. And I knew that. And so I left and took a year off. And Marty Davis, who's the publisher of Just Out, she posted, she's one of my Facebook friends, because I'm so into, you know, I'm so hip and now. So I have Facebook and MySpace, and I get somebody to show me how to log on to it. And she was one of my Facebook friends, and she said, she posted that she needed just a part-time person, administrative assistant. Part-time person. I was like, you know, I'm kind of interested in part-time. Because now my dad's at the point where he still needs the care, but I have things in place. I can't be gone all day, but I need to be gone some of the day, you know? So I begged her for this job. And she was like, you're my friend. I go, that's even better. Trust me, this will work out. And so probably against her better judgment, she hired me. And I started the end of July of 2009, and soon became the administrative manager, the assistant to the publisher, and the calendar editor. So I do the out and about section of the paper, and I work full time. But as things work out, my sister was looking for a change, and she decided to move to Oregon. So she moved here July 4th. She came with her staff and said, I'm here, and so she takes care of my dad. So I work full-time. The three of us live together. She takes her, she doesn't get paid. She takes care of my dad, and between my dad and I, we take care of the bills, you know. And so it all works out, and I love working here. I love being gay all day. Even though where I worked before, they knew I was gay. And they knew I was gay because Just Out put me on the cover. They put me on it was Black History Month, and they needed somebody black. They knew me. And so they spotlighted four or five black people in the gay community and put me on the cover. And again, I never said anything. I didn't deny being gay. I didn't even talk about it. I didn't have to pretend. Nobody asked. I never said anything. Some people close to me knew, you know, but that was it. The person that hired me, or the person that my friend to this day, that told me about the job, you know, he's very gay, and he knew, you know. So I was on the cover, and it happened that a gal that works in the mailroom, one of her favorite reads is Just Out. So she gets an issue every time it comes out, and she picks it up and goes, that looks like the girl that works on the 20th floor. And sure enough, she read the article, and then she works in the mailroom. They go floor to floor to floor, and she was showing everybody. And I didn't know this, and I come back from lunch, and sitting in my office. By then, I started out as a receptionist. I ended as a litigation specialist. So at that point, I think I was a coordinator for something, and the executive director came, was sitting at my desk in my office, and I was like, what are you doing? And when he was sitting there, he was holding the newspaper, and he held the newspaper like this, and I see this newspaper with my face on it, and I go, oh. He goes, had no idea you were gay. I'm like, yeah. He goes, how long you been gay? I was like, kind of a long time there, sir. He's like, I think it's wonderful. I stopped this from being passed around this firm because I don't think it's appropriate. But he was very supportive. He's like, if you have any issues, any problems, let me know. And I was like, ooh, that's refreshing since the last job I had booted me for, you know. And, but still, in the corporate world, and this is so, it's so hard to say, but it's so true. You can't always be yourself.
No.
You know, no matter what it is. I mean, you can't be gay, you can't be black, you can't be female, you can't be, you know, there's so many, you can't be who you are. You know, I mean, I remember several times there was three of us talking, three gals, and we all are black. And one of them, somebody walked by and kind of looked at us. Then another one walked by and kind of looked at us. And I remember her saying, we better go, because wherever three or more are gathered, they think it's a gang and we'll get in trouble. And I was like, ah, that's funny, that's it. But it was true. I got reprimanded for talking, for the three of us talking, but I'd see other pods of people talking all the time. You know? So I spent a lot of years there doing that, you know, just doing a wink and a nod. Don't want to talk, because I don't want to, you know. Certainly didn't talk about being gay, although I don't, you know, I'm not saying that they were a bad place to be. I learned a lot. I'm appreciative of the experience that I got, the knowledge that I got. I could probably go to another law firm anytime and work, you know, because it's a prestigious law firm. But I just couldn't be myself totally, and I hated that. So here, I get to be gay all day. I just get, you know, I can say, Monday morning, I can go, oh, we went to the Embers and we partied, or we went to CC Slaughter's, or, you know, and number one, I don't have anybody at work going, what's CC Slaughter's? Mm-hmm. They all know. You know.
It's a steakhouse.
Right. You know. They know, and I love that. Or, you know, whereas before I'd go, oh, yeah, we went out with some friends to a club, or, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's really nice. It's really, really nice. And, it's nice to have somebody, she's totally understanding, Marty, of, you know, the deal with my dad, and, you know, and you're able just to be yourself. It's casual. I mean, hello. I mean, sweats.
It's nice.
That is so
nice.
Important.
It is. I was telling Gary, I work at a church, and, I mean, it's a little slice of...
Yeah. I can only imagine. Trust. I go to the... what I believe to be the oldest black church in Oregon, okay? I think its roots are, it's published, so it's got to be fact. Its roots are the, you know, the oldest black church. Not the building we're in now, but that's its roots. And it is 100, we're getting ready to celebrate 156 years or something. I don't know. I could never work at my church. I can't be, they know everything about me. It's not, you know, it's not that. They're all, you know, accepting, but it's just old ways, old minds, old, you know. I can't do it.
How has that been? I mean, in the black community, you know, because there's, you know, keeping it on the down low. How has that been for you to?
Well, there's three of us. So there's powers and numbers. Power and numbers. it's interesting because my church is fine. My congregation is fine. But in the conference itself, Oregon-Washington Conference, so Seattle Vancouver, we have a church. Salem, we have a church. Portland's, my church's first church. Sometimes it's kind of iffy, you know. We had, at one point, we had a bishop that was really against it. Our minister of music is a lesbian, and I am the president of the choir. And so, you know, maybe they thought we were trying to take over or something. I don't know. But my church is very accepting. And one of my things about going back to church, and like I said, I was raised Catholic, but I'm not anymore. I'm Methodist. And one of my things that I was looking for was that I wanted to go, I love gospel music. I like the upbringing that I got, you know, in the church. But I didn't want to just go to a church that was a gay and lesbian church because it was a gay and lesbian church. I wanted to find something. I was hoping that God would steer me in a way that I could feel at home wherever I was. And I tried different denominations, and I totally believe that God gives me signs louder than anybody else. You know, some people are like, oh yeah, it was a sign from God. You know, but I believe to them, he kind of whispers. I'm a little hard-headed. I'm a Taurus. I don't know. and so I need like big signs, you know, like this is the place, you're going to be happy here. But I kept getting invited. I was like, no, I'm not going. I don't, you know. And when I walked, I finally went. One morning, I just sprung out of bed and I was like, I'm wide awake. I'm going to church. And the church is very close to where I live. And I walked in, and it's an older church, and so when you walk in the front, there's these two big grand doors, you know. So you think that's kind of to the church, but it's not, because it's an older church, and the sanctuary is upstairs. That's to the fellowship hall. So I wasn't really sure where I was going, and here comes this really distinguished-looking older lady. I mean, at this point, you know, you knew she had a life that was exciting. I could tell. I could see it in her face. But now she's, you know, needs help walking. She's got a cane and all. She's like, how you doing, baby? Like, she's, you know, known me forever. And I was telling her I wanted to come to the church and visit, and I didn't know which door. She goes, right here. This is your first time, huh? And I was like, yeah. She goes, well, welcome. My name is Della Reese. Now, Della Reese is my favorite entertainer of all times. And this woman has the same name as my favorite. It wasn't her. Okay. My favorite entertainer. Her name was Della Reese. Right? She came and sat. She had me sit with her and introduced me to everybody like we were related. And she's like, okay, now I'll see you next Sunday. I go, well, I was just visiting. I don't really think I'm, you know, going to be a member. I just came to visit. She goes, I'll see you next week. Okay. Well, I had said, okay. So then the next week I had to go because I told Della Reese I was coming. And there she was waiting for me. And I just kept going, and about, I don't know, 6 months later, I joined. But, yeah, it's, I've been accepted, I feel. Maybe not overall, but it's, again, one of those things that we don't, my pastor talks about it all the time. We don't judge. We don't care. You're going to sit in the pew. It's not about, I'm not sitting there because she's sitting there. We're a really good, tight-knit family. But overall, I think there's people that have issues with it. But again, I don't care. Not anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, so. Yay.
Well, I have a question that we thought of in regards to drag queens. And if you were to give advice to an aspiring young drag queen, what would you feel most important for them to know?
Wear makeup. there's a transition in the gay community, in the drag community right now, and the look is, it's a term called fish, real fish. Real fish means you look like a real woman. You're passing as a woman. So there's not a lot of makeup wearing around anymore. Well, in order for a guy to look like a woman, you really need to put on some makeup. You've got to contour, you know, and all that. So, seriously, I mean, it's kind of funny, but that's what I tell these girls at Drag Race, because I'm a judge for Drag Race Portland Edition. And it's a 12-week competition, and I'm like, You have on no makeup. You look like a man in a wig, and I don't like it, you know. Drag is overstated, so if you want to be a drag, wear some makeup, you know, and be real. Don't, you know. Yeah, I think, you know, everybody's pretty no matter what. And Dersel said that one time, too. She's like, when somebody puts on makeup, when they put on that queen puts on makeup for the first time, even if they just take blue eyeshadow and go like this, you know, just rub it across their eyes real quick and put on a little lipstick, they're looking in the mirror and they see pretty. So you don't want to tear them down. You want to encourage them and say, maybe you should do blue and pink. instead of going, oh, what's up with that blue eyeshadow? You know, or whatever. And it's true, because that's what happened to me. The minute Patty O'Dora put makeup on me, I was like, all right, I'm gorgeous. I'm ready. I'm going to do this, you know? And so you need it. I don't know. It's a little rant. Sorry.
I know you've been involved with the annual All Ages show. What can you tell us about that?
So that was started because we thought, how fun would it be if everybody could go to Dersel's? It would be great, you know? How fun would it be that we wouldn't have to get babysitters if we wanted to go out? Let's do an All Ages show. Kimberly Van Patten, almost everything that I'm involved in has been a vision of hers. You know, she's the dreamer, and I'm the believer, you know. There's some things that I do dream, but she really does put the effort into it and comes up with most of the ideas. So I think this is like our 15th or 16th year coming up that we've done this. I know it's been a long time because there's people coming back at me going, yeah, I remember you when I was like 7, and they're like married with kids, so it's been a while. And it's at Dersel's. OLCC allows her to suspend, I guess is the word, her license for a night. There's no alcohol whatsoever. You can't see any. You can't even order like Shirley Temple or Roy Rogers, or you remember? We used to, you know, that was the drink you got. Yeah, the kids' drinks when your parents went out. I have a Shirley Temple, which is not alcohol, but you can't say it because it's associated with it or whatever. So we do like hot dogs or corn dogs or whatever and fries and have some food back there. And then the kids get to come in. It's inexpensively priced. It's like $5, you know. So, you know, parents can come in and they do a Dersel show. So it's the Dersel cast. And then there's special guests in there. So a lot of times we'll spotlight a Rosebud and Thorn to perform. We've had them as young as like 7 performing. You know, I've had my niece perform on stage when she was 8 years old. You know, it's just, we kind of throw in some kids. And so it's like, we get to see the kids entertain. They get to see what their parents are doing when they go out and you're at home with the babysitter. They get to see Dersel, who they know but can't get into the club, you know, and so, and it's really cute because they come in, it's really cute, you know, they're going out, and it's early, you know, it's like 5 o'clock on a Sunday, you know, and it's over by 7, you know, but a lot of them come in, and they're dressed up, and like the girls will have their purses, and they tip the performers, and take pictures with the performers, and, you know, they get to kind of MC, and, you know, and so it's just a fun event for all ages, but mostly it's about having the kids come here and see what we do. You know, it's really fun. You guys should come. It's really fun.
I'd love to.
Yeah, it's really. It's coming up. It's June 6th of this year, 2010. So,
you're also involved with Sweethearts of Portland.
I am. I'm a little involved in a lot of stuff. So I was given the honor of the Order of the Sweethearts, which is, I never was a sweetheart. I never ran for the competition, but it's like an honorary member. And I'm the House of Peacock, Order of Peacock, which gives me the rights to entertain at their pageants. we've been a recipient of monies that they raise because they sell raffle tickets for like 3 weeks, and that's how they make their money and how they donate their money to other organizations. So Peacock Productions, or Audra M. Edwards, has been a recipient of that. And that's about it. I've never sat on their board or anything like that, but been supportive and been bestowed that honor and emceed several times and stuff like that. Cool. Yeah, it's a good organization. It's a nice, they do good things.
And then you're also involved with the AMA Scholarship Fund.
Mm-hmm. And that's, Audra M. Edwards Scholarship Fund, and that's why we do Peacock After Dark to raise money for that. Yeah.
And one final question. Mm-hmm. Who would you consider your hero in the local LGBT community, and why?
My my heroes are the drags that did this. Everybody that did this before we did it. Lady Elaine Peacock, Door Jar, Champagne 25. And that's probably when I started to get emotional, I'm sorry. But drag is about having fun, living life with a smile, you know? And that's what they did. It was fun. It was glamorous. It was larger than life, you know? And it had to be hard back in the day, back in the days of Darcelle, in the 60s, in this town, you know, raising money and giving it away to, at that time, like the Shriners, because there wasn't a bunch of gay organizations to give it to. So you're trying to be a community activist, or you're trying to, you know, support your community, but you're giving it to the Shriners, and I've heard stories of them donating it in somebody else's name because they wouldn't dare take money from a gay group, you know. So those people that decided, screw it all, I'm doing it anyway, are my heroes. And that's those pioneers, and Maine, Darcelle, Champagne, and Lady Elaine Peacock, who really seriously changed my life. If it hadn't have been for her, I wouldn't have known anything about this thing they call drag. So I can't really pick one, but there's a lot of them, and we need them, you know. We needed them. We need them. We're blessed to still have a lot of them with us, to teach us and help us get through and support us. And that's what it means to, you know, stand on the shoulders. You know, I don't think I ever really understood that when, like, my mom would say it or whatever. But as you get older, you understand that you really are standing, you know, you're standing tall because somebody else fell. Now you're standing on them because they worked so hard to get you to this point, or, you know, and maybe they didn't do it with that in mind, but they did it. They were successful, you know, and so I love it. I love them, and I love drag. I love drag.
Yeah. Is there anything that you can think of that you'd like to share with us? In regards to the history of the community, the drag community, etc.
No, I think I think we've shared everything that I've been involved in, who I am. We touched on the court, church. I think we, you know, it's pretty well-rounded.
Maria, yeah. You're incredible. Thank you.
Thank you. This was so much fun. Thank you.
I really appreciate the time you've taken with us, and I appreciate you just to let you know specifically.
Oh, thank you very much. This was very nice. I was nervous, but it was very nice. Okay.